And I am very confident that in the coming year, we're going to see a lot of unparalleled innovation and collaboration in the advertising ecosystem. I think Privacy Sandbox already sort of exemplifies this with a lot of competitors coming together and uniting for a stronger future.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Identity Architects, the InfoSum podcast that spotlights the incredible leaders in the media industry shaping the future of data-driven advertising. I'm your host, Ben Cicchetti. And in 2023, one of the biggest topics of the year was the retail media boom. And that growth shows no signs of slowing down as we move through 2024. One company that is incredibly well placed in the retail media space is Criteo, which is why we were thrilled for our COO, Lauren Wetzel, to sit down with Nola Solomon, SVP Global Go-to-Market Strategy and Commercialization at Criteo. Before we jump into that conversation, this is your reminder to hit that subscribe button so you'll always be the first to know when the latest episodes of Identity Architects drop. But without any further delay, here's Lauren and Nola.
Hi, Nola. Welcome to Identity Architects. We're so happy to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm so stoked to be here.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know you, I'm fortunate to know you. Can you first just kick us off with a quick intro to who you are, to Criteo, to your role?
Yeah. So I'm Nola Solomon. I lead Criteo's global go-to-market organization. So really the team that is bridging between product and sales and marketing to really understand what the needs of our customers are, how we need to build that into the products, and then commercializing those back into the hands of our customers for hopefully their utter enjoyment. And Criteo is really focused on, you know, driving complete full stack opportunities for commerce companies, whether that's D2C marketers or retailers or big agencies and enterprise brands, as well as traditional publishers, to be able to maximize the value of commerce media through our commerce media platform and grow their businesses in this crazy world we're in.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine sort of a cooler time in our industry to be in some of the companies, but in Criteo in particular, I think has been on a really unique journey, frankly, since you got there. And I think your role is really unique. So I think for our audience, as we sort of dive into things, I think hearing a little bit more about your role, you know, everyone likes to learn about the tech, likes to learn about the solutions, how we're solving for things around addressability, around identity. I know you'll get to that, but I also just think your career journey is really unique and interesting. So I'm excited to dive in to that a little bit as well. So we will start off with our quick fire questions. We do this every time and it really helps our Identity Architects audience to get to know you a little bit better. And it really just puts you on the spot really quickly. So I'll start with your earliest memory of advertising. What is it?
Okay. It's actually a Gushers ad. There was an ad for Gushers where like the kids' cheeks would like pop out, like, and the eyeballs would bug out. And, it just looked like such a fun thing to eat. And I was not allowed to have junk food growing up. So I'd have to sneak it at my friends' houses or like trade Z's at lunchtime. And I always remember whenever there was a Gusher packet involved, I was highly motivated because of that advertisement and they were just fun to eat.
I'm going to look back up a Gushers commercial after this, because I know exactly what you're talking about. And it really did make it seem like the most desirable. It's like Gushers and fruit by the foot, I think.
Yes.
We're...
That was the other one. I was like, Gushers and fruit by the foot. Yeah.
What did you want to be when you were younger, career-wise?
I wanted to be the next Mia Hamm. I was a big, big soccer player, have been my whole life. I was number 9 on all my teams in, you know, honor of Mia. And I had the poster of the 96 Olympic team and the 99 World Cup team up on my wall where Mia's like, you know, arms crossed in front of the team. And I just idolized her, in that generation of women in soccer. So that's what I wanted to be.
What position did you play?
Center mid, like Mia. Well, she played forward, I guess, but attacking center mid. So I like to score goals.
What was your first job in either advertising or marketing, since, you know, soccer at some point got put on hold?
Yeah. At some point I realized I wasn't actually going to be the next Mia Hamm, sadly. Although I tried as hard as I could, but it's funny because I always think of my first job in advertising being the ad trafficker role that I fell into at Specific Media, but I actually started much earlier than that. I was a social media marketer for this B2C company called Coupon Craze. Talk about early days of commerce media. I had this like alter ego called Coupon Granny. And my job was to post on Facebook, just like the coolest, latest kind of coupons from Coupon Craze to get more Facebook likes or to get more like newsletter subscriptions. And that was really my first foray into advertising and marketing when I look back on it.
Well, it was destiny now full circle back into to commerce, the next chapter. And what drew you into the advertising industry and maybe more importantly, what keeps you in it? Because clearly it started there. And to your point on, I listened to your ad tech god podcast and kind of heard of a lot of different chapters that sort of rounded out your advertising background. But what kind of just keeps you in it?
I think what keeps me in it is the dynamic, ever-changing nature of it, honestly. Like, I'm somebody who's, for better or for worse, easily bored. And this industry really keeps me on my toes. I also really like building things. And I think that, this industry is all about creativity and creation and marrying functionality with creativity in a way that also democratizes the internet, which is something I care about a lot about with my background writing, with my dad having been a journalist and my grandfather having been in publishing as well. Like, making sure that we have a healthy publisher ecosystem and fostering trust across the open internet for users worldwide is something I actually truly deeply care about.
Yeah, I love that. What advice would you give to someone who's just starting a career in media and advertising?
I would say, so two things come to mind. The first would be like, educate yourself like it's a full-time job. This is an evergreen activity in my mind. Read everything, talk to everybody, be really open-minded. But also pressure test what you hear and formulate your own opinions and really think about it because, it's just opinion and there's a lot of different ways of thinking out there. The second thing I would say is just from a career perspective, unless it's physically dangerous or psychologically dangerous to yourself, like say yes to every opportunity. Don't be afraid to take risks because I found that growth really comes from overcoming discomfort.
I love that. And I can attest to you being incredibly curious. I feel like the first time we met, it's like you're almost like in these conversations talking about, our solutions on the InfoSum side or the industry, and you're sort of used to everyone just like the head nodding, especially because it was a meeting in Cannes. And then you're like, wait, let's go like two steps down. Let's go a little bit further. What have you thought about it this way? Which I think those are the best conversations to have. And was one of the first things that I think captivated me about you. But how would you describe what you do? This is my favorite question, within media and advertising to a 10-year-old.
All right. Well, I'm not exactly sure the level of like detail a 10-year-old is capable of understanding. So I might have oversimplified in how I think about this, but I would say that the way I would approach a 10-year-old to explain what I do, especially within this ecosystem, is I help people build things at our company I help people understand what to build at our company based on what you want and why you want it in a way that's going to make your life easier or more fun or something else that's of value to you. And then once that product is built, I'm making sure that you know about it, you know how to use it, you're enjoying it, and that you want more of it.
I love that. Going from more tactical and pragmatic to a little bit larger, which is what inspires you?
I mean, a lot of things. So it's really hard to kind of pinpoint it. I'm lucky and I get excited about a lot of different stuff. But I think the two things that come to mind the most for me when it comes to ad tech or my career or things I do is one, the community of people. So in ad tech, we have an incredible community of people that just inspires me all the time. And especially when I'm having a rough go of it. Just going to an event and immersing myself with everybody and the conversations and kind of the fun that everyone brings to the table here while we're doing, serious stuff, kind of keeps me inspired. And then the other is I mentioned before, but I love building stuff. I love the combination of marrying function with creativity. So building a new product, launching a new product, a cool strategic partnership. I love a good future trip. So sell me on what could be and I get inspired.
If there was a song that was a soundtrack to your life, what would it be? Or if, say, you know, Nola's winning the award and the Grammy goes to, what's sort of like pumping in the background as you're walking out on stage?
Well, I think it's a hard one to answer because obviously you have many phases of your life and finding a thread throughout them. But I think that if I was to find one thread of one song that kind of encapsulates a lot of things, it would be The Middle by Jimmy Eat World. The reason here, right, is because I'm incredibly impatient by nature. And I'm also a bit of a perfectionist. And I've always felt, just given my like childhood growing up super focused on school and soccer, I was very introverted and I didn't really feel like I fit in all the time. And so the combination of those things, as I think about the lyrics of that song, I mean, I also love a good pop punk song anyway, but the lyrics of that song are really about how everything just takes time. You're in the middle of the journey. Everything's going to be okay in the end, but also, you know, do your best and also be yourself and don't necessarily do what everyone else wants you to do or what they think you should do. Do what's true to you. And I think that that is something that I've, you know, struggled with, thought a lot about and tried always to live by, sometimes successfully, sometimes less successfully. But in the end, it's about finding your community and finding your home in the world. And that comes in multiple different facets. So that's, I think the song kind of encapsulates a lot of those things for me.
You just spiced up our playlist. It's actually a real InfoSum Identity Architects playlist that we pull together. So we typically, I forget when, maybe it's during like Spotify Wrapped or something, we share it out. But that'll get added. And that was a fantastic answer. And I agree with that sentiment. It's easy to feel in any industry and also in our industry that you're just sort of on a little bit of a conveyor belt. And it's rare, I think, that people sort of check in with themselves and sort of ask themselves, is this authentic to me? Is this, you know, mm-hmm. the right path for me? And then sometimes it's actually more difficult to sort of get off that conveyor belt and sort of do the opposite of what's expected of you.
Yeah.
Great quick fire. I'm going to go into some of, you know, just a little bit more about what's going on at Criteo, what's going on in our industry. You have such a powerful voice. And again, for anyone who's listening in, like, I just love the way that you explain things and you break things down. So people should be following you on LinkedIn, and you're kind of always in a lot of different articles. And I think it's really helping as people are navigating cookie deprecation, privacy, all these topics we're going to get into. So I'll start with the cookie going away, which this wouldn't be a podcast in the year early 2024 if I didn't start with that. And obviously the increase of privacy regulations, organizations obviously need to find new and better ways to reach their customers. And there's always been this thin line between individually targeted ads reaching the right people and broad advertising campaigns to reach as many people as possible. And you know that because you've worked in a lot of these unique kind of areas where you might specialize in one versus the other. And I think you've been an amazing translator in your career or bridge of those two. And that's regardless of whether they're reaching the right people. So how can we find and strike that right balance between good campaign performance and customer centricity?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, I think fundamentally cookie deprecation doesn't mean that we lose the balance between campaign performance and customer centricity to drive those positive results in a privacy safe manner. I think strategies like contextual targeting, first party data utilization can help solve these issues, along with transparent communication and consent based marketing, which is really important. So the goal really, in my mind, is to understand and respect individual preferences while delivering impactful campaigns. And Criteo's approach to addressability includes working with Google's Privacy Sandbox, using first-party data, leveraging closed environments like retailers, e-commerce sites, and social channels. And by combining all of these solutions together, along with other cookieless commerce signals and AI, we can help clients really think about achieving that performance they're looking for and those customer acquisition goals through personalized advertising at scale.
And for Google Privacy Sandbox, we just had actually Alex Cohn on the podcast a few weeks back. And so I got a little bit of a deep dive on that. And it's been amazing to see Criteo have such a voice behind it. So what has your experience of Privacy Sandbox been so far?
Yeah, I think quite a bit. And I think that there's still a lot of confusion about what's being tested, when, what it means for our industry out there. And I really think the bottom line is that the tests that are ongoing right now or about to start is not about proving Privacy Sandbox functionality, but more so diagnostic tools that are helping us figure out what are the tweaks and improvements that need to be made for it to work seamlessly. So fundamentally, the industry is shifting from thinking about how they conduct A/B testing experiments in this ecosystem in a world of third-party cookies and now without third-party cookies, with a new set of API solutions instead. So obviously it's a big change, and that can lead to a lot of confusion and anxiety. But I think that companies that are investing in the Privacy Sandbox, and it's really important for them to invest in testing that with their ad tech partners, are going to be thinking about how do they maintain that effective targeting and access to that valuable data for optimization while they're prioritizing user privacy and trust to ensure that we as an industry holistically are having a healthy and independent media ecosystem and staying aligned with the evolving industry trends as they will continue to evolve.
And as it evolves, like, how prepared do you think we are, like, for this end of third-party cookies? Are we prepared? Are we not prepared? I go back and
forth. Well, I think 2024 is a year of learning and transition for the industry, right? We are testing. We're doing a lot of work, and especially Criteo, we've been working with Google since its infancy in terms of the announcement of the Privacy Sandbox and testing what's being prepared for and the potential changes in Chrome to enable those marketing efforts for our clients and the monetization for our publishers to continue to be robust and performant. But I am very confident that in the coming year, we're going to see a lot of unparalleled innovation and collaboration in the advertising ecosystem. I think Privacy Sandbox already sort of exemplifies this with a lot of competitors coming together and uniting for a stronger future. And so that's a testament to the spirit. But we've really transcended, I think, an era of sole reliance on third-party cookies for addressable interactions. And we're entering this era of a plethora of options, right, where Privacy Sandbox is just one single avenue. And there are others like retail media and closed environments like social as well, which are all experiencing major booms. And so at Criteo, we really think about having a holistic addressability strategy that addresses all of those in a way that reduces fragmentation and improves and increases client growth despite, you know, any headwinds that are happening in the space and while keeping consumer privacy top and center.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think I love the idea of options because, you know, to your point on the industry coming together, it's like also you can see the tension that exists where you're putting all the pressure on this company or that company. And sometimes there's just this lack of accountability to just accept like, this is right for consumers. So we're going to all have to figure this out. I think, in my opinion, Criteo's just done a really good job of that level of constructive feedback that's not only going obviously direct to the Sandbox team and direct to the industry, but you're absolutely right. It's always under the vein of there are many options, there are many ways. And also, in credit to your role, it's also about education because I just think people come in and they start talking about these things. And sometimes like I think the industry is like talking past each other. And that obviously happens a lot. But on one topic, and you talk a lot about this, Criteo talks a lot about this, but for addressability specifically, like what role does addressability play when it comes to personalized advertising?
Yeah, well, I think that first you have to identify what the challenges are for advertisers, for brands and agencies in this, you know, ecosystem right now. So firstly, it's consumers want to be in control of their own personal data. Secondly, regulators are formalizing consumer demands for this control. And marketers and media owners, therefore, are having to think about how their businesses are threatened and needing to grow at the same time. So how do they bridge between that and the personalization gap that's being created with, you know, some of the signal loss? So, you know, it's dependent, but it's also not, I think it's, to go back to the point I made before, like it's about all the different pathways that we can bring together to tell that addressability story versus only one specific one, which is whether that's first party data or whether that's privacy sandbox or whether that's the closed ecosystems or other cookieless commerce signals. So really having a holistic strategy and a multi-pronged approach, which is, you know, the approach Criteo has taken, will help tackle that personalization gap while ensuring that there's relevant privacy safe advertising.
What additional work do you think needs to be done? I mean, for both you and I, we're working directly with businesses, and your first point, which I loved, was just specifically immediately to the customer. Like, this is what customers want. They have a relationship, a trusted relationship. You know, they'll hand over their email for a 10% coupon, but there's some notion of a value exchange. Like, what still needs to be done so that the industry is considerate of customers and just realizing that they're also consumers, not just advertisers. And so even when we're in this like B2B environment, I still think that there's this notion that sometimes we just forget when we're talking about all the solves for addressability, where we're sort of, you know, we still kind of leave the consumer out of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that businesses really need to focus on transparency. And that's going to take a few different forms depending on what type of business you have and what kind of interaction you have with your consumers. Ethical advertising, right, is really important here. Thinking about always top of mind privacy protection for your users as well as their user experience, and making sure that you're considerate of what their desires are to engage with you as a brand, as a publisher, whatever that touch point is. So things like continuously testing the privacy sandbox or alternative methods of activating addressable privacy safe advertising is really critical to build that trust between consumers and, you know, the brands or publishers.
All great pieces of advice for all constituents in our industry, and makes it easier for us to all have good conversations with family members who are not in our industry when they, as consumers, ask you a million questions as to whether channels are listening to them and why they get this ad and why something's chasing them around the internet. That's always my favorite. Let's shift gears to retail media. It was probably one of the hottest topics of 2023. Why do you think it garnered so much attention last year? And now into 2024, do you feel like it's living up to the hype? Like, you bearish, bullish?
Very, very bullish. So retail media is the number one secular growth trend in digital advertising. And I think this growth is only going to continue to boom. We saw that it represents about $42 billion market opportunity, which is massive. And retailers are starting to realize that they can use retail media to monetize both their inventory and their data. And this is a growing trend, right, in terms of helping them shore up their businesses in light of these macroeconomic challenges we're all facing. And they're able to do that across both digital channels and the physical world. So I'm very excited about the future of retail media.
From your perspective and experience, what advice would you give any company that's currently looking into retail media, either things that you learned from Criteo or just the experience that you have with some of the brands who are taking the most advantage of it?
Yeah, well, I think probably kind of like two main things. So the first one is kind of critical to understand the need for unification. So the number one hurdle right now for retail media success, like being super successful, is fragmentation, which Forrester, I think, did a study that says that about 20% of revenue loss across retail media is due to fragmentation challenges. So while there is a lot of progress that's happening, it's clear that there is a need for collaborative and collective collaboration across the entire industry to unleash the full potential of retail media and ultimately also the broader umbrella of commerce media in terms of this, you know, defragmentation, unification of this huge growth opportunity. But the other thing I think is really important for those getting or thinking to get into retail media is to ask yourselves the question, are you primarily a retailer or are you primarily a media company? So it should really be thinking, going back to the consumer, about how you engage with your consumer. So that should be the question you revolve around. And how do you leverage media to enhance every touch point with that consumer? So if you take this kind of strategic approach in terms of how you get to increase discovery, more purchases, and the desired outcome, which is ultimately more transactions and growth for the retailers, by thinking first about who is your consumer, how do they want to engage with you, how do they see you, how do you see yourself, then you know that will help anybody thinking about getting into retail media to streamline whatever programs decide to put into place more effectively, so that they have the right tools and the right partners to combat fragmentation and to build that trust with their consumers for the growth they're looking for.
That's super helpful. What do you think the future of retail media looks like, or if you have any predictions for it going into 2025 and beyond?
Yeah, well, I will kind of jump, keep on the bandwagon of very bullish, right? I think it's going to continue to boom. I think marketers are beginning to understand and will continue to do so, the importance of taking an omni-channel approach. So physical stores we're seeing are making a comeback. And this is really blurring the intersection of online and offline that's going to require retailers and brands to really step on the gas towards a more fully integrated omni-channel commerce future. So marketers should be thinking about how do they prioritize developing holistic marketing strategies and providing consumers with cohesive shopping experiences. That's whether they're online or whether they're in store.
Yeah, I also think there's just going to be any sort of stand up of an ad network, even if it's for a very specific purpose, because you have a data asset, because you have inventory, because it's transaction based. I also think it's going to be really interesting how some of those retail media networks, as they stand up, like the insights that they get out, and how does that impact other areas of the business? How does that impact R&D? How does that impact, you know, what goes on the shelf, what gets packaged together, new partnerships? So I think, in addition to everything you just said, and maybe one more thing I would add is, I think it's for everyone. Like, I think we always talk about the big players, like those who have all the assets, but I do think it'll be interesting to see sort of some of the smaller and like very niche players that have a very specific audience. Like, how do they play? Where do they play? How much is it owned and operated? You know, to your point on sort of the resourcing and the stand up of it, I'm really curious to kind of see some of the other retailers, like even selfishly, like the retailers that I really love, that are unique and interesting to Lauren, like, you know, do they kind of stand up their own networks? Do they rely just on, you know, the tools and tech of, say, you know, a larger company like a Walmart that's been at this for a while, like a Target, Roundel, which has had this separate division. So I'm curious to see how that falls out. But it's similar, in my opinion, to even data collaboration technology, where you kind of start with just a solve for how can two sort of data sets come together, and it's for a specific purpose, say it's activation or it's measurement. And then how does that kind of pull back into insights, and what else can you do with it? And I think retail media is going to kind of have its own evolution of, you know, moving just from sort of being this transactional advertising based business, which obviously hopefully has great margins and is successful for anyone who's investing in it, and great for the brand partners who don't have a lot of data and who rely on those retailers. But I also am curious to see how that also just impacts other areas of the business.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, how this is going to evolve into a mid to long tail opportunity for the smaller retailers and marketplaces, and also how, what's the role of marketplace amongst retailers, which is also, you know, growing in significance for them as a business, is going to be very interesting to watch, and also to see how companies like Criteo and others in the space can kind of address some of the needs there to help grow. But also, I think important what you mentioned as well is, where do they want to lean, and what kind of ownership do they want to take upon themselves versus relying on other partners, whether that's another retailer that's established and larger, or whether that's a tech provider or some combination, is going to be a big question for them to answer, and also to really understand what it takes to stand up a retail media network, and the many different ways you can do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you Criteo are very well positioned to sort of help with that journey. And so I think that'll be really unique and interesting. We talked on a lot of topics. We talked on privacy. We talked on addressability. We talked on sort of how a lot of those things come together, retail media. It could be any of those things, or it could be something else. Like, what's really exciting you about the industry? What sort of, you know, you said you get bored or you're impatient. And so clearly there's got to be something that's just firing you up at the start of this year. So what is it?
Yeah, there is. It's a two letter word called AI. yeah, I know a little word with big punch packs a big punch, but I've been very interested, both in a I'm very excited and also I'm very frightened kind of way about all the different ways that AI can be used in our world, much less in our industry. But I do think, and I'm keeping very excited tabs on anytime I see a press release about something AI generated. And I think AI is going to thread. I mean, it's already threaded through our industry, right? Because it's how we build optimization models. I mean, it's been inherent to ad tech since its inception. But AI has a much bigger role to play now with all of the advancements that we've seen in the past year or so. And so I'm very excited to see how those thread through the commerce ecosystem and the retail media ecosystem and the ways in which brands and retailers and publishers leverage it to engage better and build more trust with their consumers and to maximize the opportunity. So there's a lot of different things that Criteo is already starting to explore with AI that I find very interesting. So things as, you know, kind of basic conceptually, but still quite complex to put in place as internal operating models and tools for functionality and to create efficiencies, as well as really interesting creative uses for creative tech, which is, I think, a natural go-to for everybody in our industry to think about when you think about AI, but really about how you use it to help in our industry, marketers strike that balance between personalization and privacy, going back to the very beginning of our conversation, in the wake of third-party cookie deprecation. So AI is going to help marketers, I think, create new types of audiences, new ad formats, identity-proof solutions, enhanced user personalization, engagement. That's all going to be towards improving performance and improving recommendations and traffic acquisition models in a way that hopefully will delight the consumers and be very relevant for them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. What's net new to what you just described in some of the areas that Criteo obviously is looking at it? Like, what's something you haven't been able to do for your brand clients that now you can do because of AI? And then the other lens, and I'm an operations nerd, so for me, it's like, what takes you 1 week and now with AI takes you one day? What goes from a couple hours task to a couple seconds task? And maybe the unfortunate side of things, and I think this is where creative ends up being kind of a hot topic. It's the feeling of, can you ever really replace, you know, the sort of human aspect of creative? And I think that'll continue to be like a hotly debated topic in our industry for the next year. But I am very curious. I also agree and I'm very bullish on AI. And frankly, I'm glad you raised it because I don't think it comes up actually on this podcast enough. Because I think so many are focused on identity and privacy, and obviously I'm super passionate about that. But I think hearing all the things that Criteo are doing is incredibly helpful, and we'll stay tuned to follow it.
Yeah, thank you. We have a lot of good stuff coming down the pipe, and I'm also very excited about what's more beyond that.
Yeah, you won't be bored with AI. I don't think, and it won't be solved any moment soon. Final two questions. I always love to just give all guests just an opportunity. If there's anything that I didn't ask or anything you just wanted to share, either on what you're working on, what you're passionate about you, to give you sort of some airtime to capture it, or if you feel like all has been said. And again, I think your super talent is translating things in ways that people can understand in a very eloquent way. So I already think what you've offered our audience has been amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. It's very, very kind. I would say, you know, I think I would just reinforce the point that the industry is going through a lot of change, and it's really important that we are patient with that. There's a lot of desire to get answers quickly, you know, whether that's the, you know, answers about how privacy sandbox testing is performing and at super granular levels, which we just simply can't in any kind of responsible way provide right now as an industry. So really kind of embracing the fact that economies of scale are real here. Patience and time is real here. Nothing is going to be perfect out of the gate. And the whole point is to continue to work together to tweak it towards what we need it to become for everybody, and it's most especially for consumers. And that there are companies like Criteo that are out there, you know, providing holistic omni-channel approaches to maintaining addressability in the future across every channel, not just, you know, browser-based advertising. So, you know, I think cutting through the noise and remembering that change is uncomfortable and leads to growth, as I said earlier, you know, we're in that moment right now as an industry. So, you know, rest easier than you might otherwise without that in mind.
Yeah, I think patience and commitment are two really good pieces of feedback. And I don't, again, when everyone's very quick to criticize, quick to judge, wants the answer yesterday, and doesn't realize that as an industry or as individual companies reinventing to make things better, like, it's just going to take a little bit of time and it's going to take a little bit more effort than a lot of the ways that we did things before. So I completely agree with that. Last question, Nola, is any recommendations for folks we can pull onto this podcast that you admire, that you think would have a strong, you know, voice that we need to hear on, you know, just people who are shaping and pioneering identity in our space?
Yeah. So the person that immediately comes to mind in terms of having expertise in marrying media and data is Denise Colella. So firstly, she's an amazing human. And I was lucky enough to work for her, and she hired me when I was when I first joined NBCU to lead the programmatic team. And she was running the advanced advertising and data group across linear and digital environments. So, you know, the kind of brain power behind Audience Studio, which was called AdSmart at the time, and then also everything that was going around audience segmentation, the use of, you know, DMP platforms and data management tools. So across, you know, set-top box data, digital, all sorts of very complex broadcast ecosystems and digital and non-digital. So she's incredible, an incredible base of knowledge and incredible human. And now she's leading data strategy at Adobe on their media and financial services customer base. So I think she'd be a fantastic person to get on the podcast and also just a fantastic person to know and talk to.
Awesome. I have an old colleague who worked for her as well. She hired him, and that exact descriptor is very, very similar. So we absolutely would love to have Denise, and I will reach out with your recommendation. So just for everyone listening, just thank you for tuning in. Nola, you have such an amazing background, such amazing things that Criteo are doing. It's such a renaissance moment for the company, and I know you've been just at such a core part of the helm of it. So just thank you for sharing. Thank you for all you're doing to drive change in our industry. And everyone listen to what Nola said, which is, let's be a little bit patient because we're going to all come together. We're going to make a lot of the change happen. So just thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Thanks again to Nola for joining us. Retail media is a space that continues to excite and intrigue me. I'm one of those people who thinks we're just scratching the surface of the media network trend and expect to see other verticals follow in retail's footsteps. And following our episode with Alex from Google Privacy Sandbox, it was great to get Nola's perspective on that as well. I'd encourage you all to go back and listen to our last episode with Alex if you haven't already. All that leaves me to do is to remind you to hit that subscribe button so you'll know when the next episode of Identity Architects lands. But until then, thanks for listening.